This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later, we'll talk about co-op grocery stores and progress towards starting one in Clifton. To start the show, last December, People's Liberty named Brad Cooper as one of its 2015 Hail Fellows and awarded him $100,000 to develop his plan to build two 200-square-foot houses in Cincinnati. Many people and community planners look at small or tiny houses as affordable, environmentally friendly alternatives to traditional house designs. Joining us for an update on his Start Small project and to discuss the tiny house movement are 2015 Hail Fellow Brad Cooper and architect, city planner, and urban designer Eve Picker with City Lab. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Eve and Brad, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Brad, tell us first off, what is the tiny house movement exactly?
Yeah, I think the tiny house movement, you see it a lot with tiny homes on wheels, about 200 square feet. And a lot of it is about freedom of choice and paring down your possessions so you can experience the world or experience the country mostly on the road. And a lot of these are sited in rural areas, so they have a lot of acres to kind of roam around in. And I think the same ethos applies in the city where you have a small home and you kind of have a lot of the amenities, the third spaces, a lot of the amenities in the cities that you can enjoy.
So this is about simplifying things. It's kind of a move in that direction.
Correct. Yes.
City Lab, Eve, that's the organization that you're working with. You're in Garfield, Pennsylvania, which is a part of Pittsburgh. And City Lab thinks that building small houses could make a big impact. Why tiny houses, Eve? What are the benefits?
So we came at this from a slightly different direction. We had City Lab is also a nonprofit, and we had finished exploring how to turn eyes to a particular neighborhood, Garfield in Pittsburgh. This neighborhood is very, very blighted. It has lots of vacant lots, and for the most part, it's not a place that people consider moving to. So we were looking for ways to perhaps rebrand the neighborhood, turn eyes to it, but also how to explore reusing all of the vacant lots there. And so the tiny house for us sort of fills all of that criteria.
So when you're talking a tiny house, Eve, Brad's is around 200 square feet. What size are you talking here?
We're talking 360 square feet.
Now, have you...
Not quite as tiny as Brad. Pretty tiny, though.
One of the things you brought up, Eve, I think about the vacant lots, I think that's something that is probably fairly prominent across a lot of Midwestern cities. And I think especially here in Cincinnati can apply to many different cities. I'll be building in Over the Rhine. But I think a lot of the different neighborhoods could follow a similar model that both of us are exploring.
So
I think also with the tiny house movement, I mean, one of the things happened is that, you know, the average size of a new single family home in the United States just grew and grew to be almost 2,500 square feet by 2007. And so with the financial crisis of 2007 to 2008, there's been a lot of interest in living simple and living smaller because it's more affordable. So although, you know, there's one side of the movement is people, you know, wanting to be free of, you know, the shackles of a home rooted to the ground, the other is simply born out of necessity. How can you live more affordably in a city?
Eve, has there been research done that shows people have an interest in smaller living?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Can you say
Has there been research done that shows people have an interest in smaller living?
Oh, yes, there has. I can't remember the article at the moment, but there's been in research done, I think, by the Urban Land Institute, which sort of has looked in general at housing sizes. I can't remember the name of the particular article at the moment, but I think there has been research done.
But the research did show that the people, this is something that people are interested in, correct?
Absolutely, and I'll tell you now, we haven't broken ground yet. But I get a call every day about the tiny house. We have had perhaps 15 news articles written, some of them national, and it really never ends. There is an enormous interest in this. We had one story run on local TV, and while it was airing, someone called me and said, you know, I'm paying more in rent than I would be paying in a mortgage and principal interest and taxes on a tiny house, and I'd move there tomorrow. So I think there's a lot of...
Okay, I think we have lost contact with Eve, so we'll try to reestablish contact with her. But
yeah, in the study, I think Eve...
Can you hear me?
Oh, there we go. She's back. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. I'm here.
Okay. You were talking about the interest and the reaction that you've gotten to the tiny houses. And did you have anything more you wanted to add to that?
Well, I don't know where you lost me. But
that's about where we lost you.
There's been an enormous outpouring of interest. It's kind of never ending. We haven't broken ground yet, and people are immensely interested in seeing how this will work. So, yeah, I think it's very real. It's a very real solution to an affordability problem.
And I think the ULI article that you were talking about, Eve, also talked about micro apartments. So it's not just tiny homes on wheels that people are interested in, but living smaller generally.
Yeah. A micro apartment.
Yeah, I think New York City has a micro apartment building up, going up now that's under 300 square feet per unit, I believe. And I know there's one in Providence or another East Coast city that has micro apartments in an old mall.
Well, these are considered large compared to micro apartments in Japan, where it's just a necessity, right?
Right.
Now, Eve or Brad, do either of you know of cities, any cities where they have full neighborhoods of tiny houses? Has anybody taken that approach?
No, not yet. Not that I know of.
Yeah, I have not. I'm not aware of a full village.
Now, Brad...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, Eve.
Well, in Pittsburgh, there's a developer working on a plot of land for 20 pretty small homes. I think they're not super tiny, but they're well under 1,000 square feet. And as a developer, I'm looking at a little village of 10 homes, again in Garfield. These will probably be about 350 square feet each.
Brad,
I'm sure there's other people doing things like that as well.
Sure. And Brad, your two homes that you're planning to build, where exactly are they going to be?
They're going to be on Pete Street and Over the Rhine, which is kind of northern edge of Over the Rhine with Mount Auburn, north of Rothenburg Academy and the Moorline Tap Room. And so they're going to be on sites next to each other, which I think have a lot of benefits, both in the possibility of shared utilities and not having the homes on an island in an urban environment where a lot of the buildings around are 2, 3, some of them 4 or 5 stories.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten from the neighborhood, from the people living?
A lot of the neighbors are surprised about the tiny home. Some of them were not aware of the tiny home movement or what that actually means, but generally positive reception.
Okay. So similar to what Eva's getting, you've had a lot of good reaction to it and a lot of interest.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Now, environmental advantages. What are some of the environmental advantages of a home like this?
I think some of the environmental aspects that are positive are just a smaller footprint in general, less material, less waste. The inherent energy savings you're going to have in a small home and the ability to use a site for something more than a building, but possibly growing vegetables, having trees or other landscaping in a city environment, I think has huge positive benefits.
Now, these are solar powered. Is that correct?
That's the goal. Looking into the pricing now, and that adds a lot of cost to something that is already getting a little bit of expensive. When you're looking at site costs that are the same, rather when you're building a 1,000 square foot home or a 200 square foot home, a lot of the site costs are the same. So the solar panel pricing is being worked on now.
And you talk about these as being zero net waste. How tough is it to accomplish that?
Yeah, so they're supposed to be net zero energy. And what that starts with is both the homeowner and their behavior. You know, you're not going to be using hot water for taking 15, 20-minute showers. You're not going to be keeping the house set at 68 degrees in the summer. So it starts with behavior, and then it's the building envelope, how tightly sealed that is, the insulation value. And I'm working on some energy modeling now in this program called Sapphira, and that starts to model what the building is and how it responds to the environment.
Eve, when it comes to the project that you're involved in, how much did environmental advantages play into your considerations on your project?
Well, I have to tell you honestly, getting this thing built has been grueling, and environmental considerations are important, but we have no budget left for things like solar panels. In addition, our lot is very small, and it's up against an existing house, and we would not get enough sun to be able to generate energy through solar panels. So we've decided not to go that route. The biggest issue for us has been the fact that on these vacant parcels of land, typically the city or the previous owner will simply collapse the last house into the basement, which means that there is a lot of excavating to do for a tiny little house, and that is very expensive. We have to go down 8 feet to pour footings for a 330 square foot structure. We are also required in a principal city to tap into the water and sewer lines. And to do that in this particular site, that means digging out to the other side of the street a trench that is about 12 feet deep that's going to have to be shored up and refilled along with the sidewalk. Our costs for site works are higher than the house themselves. And that's been a lot of work for us to try and figure out how to minimize those costs and still stay within the requirements of the building and the zoning code. It's a very difficult problem.
Yeah, that's surprising that the site costs have been an obstacle. Have you found that to be the same thing, Brad?
Yeah, I'm working on that now. I don't think that hearing Eve talk, the lines are not as far away as she's experiencing, but that'll definitely be a huge part of the cost of the homes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, what price range are we talking about with these tiny houses? Brad?
Yeah, I was
sales
looking.
Sales price. What would it cost to buy one of these?
Well, I was looking at a price of $70,000, and that was kind of a bottom-up approach, looking at making these affordable for someone making below 50% of area median income, which would be around $24,000 here in Cincinnati. But the build costs are definitely higher than that.
And that's the same experience you've had.
I'm looking at a slightly different structure. I'm looking at a sales price of $99,500, which is higher than I initially wanted. But our costs are at the moment at $180,000.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. The Urban Redevelopment Authority is going to provide a second deferred mortgage, so it definitely at that price it would be within the realm of affordable. However, we are probably going to go to auction because we really don't know what the market is for the house, and because there is so much grant money that's going into it, if we can sell it for a little more, we really need to. So I have a floor, but I don't know what it's actually going to sell for. We're still hoping that we can get the costs down to about $165,000, but I'm not certain yet.
We will have more about the tiny house movement and plans for building two of them in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. My guests this afternoon are 2015 Hail Fellow Brad Cooper and architect, city planner, and urban designer Eve Picker with City Lab. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Eve, the site costs are a huge obstacle based on what you're telling me. What are some ways to overcome that? I mean, what can be done to handle that whole thing?
I wish
you knew the answer to that.
So, you know, part of the exercise for us, we received a grant from Neighborhood Allies. It's called a catalytic grant. It's a foundation in Pittsburgh. And part of what we were trying to do was to show people how to build a tiny house themselves. So we have a blog on our website called the Tiny House Journal. It's at citylabpgh.org. And we have really blogged every step of the way about every hurdle we have hit in an effort to show people what they're going to have to do. And we have really hoped to build without applying for zoning variances and find a way to do this economically. And I feel that we have not been successful at that. I think there are maybe a few things that could make it a little bit easier at the zoning and at the building code level. But the very big things, the fact that there is a house that's been collapsed into the basement, that the ground is bad for pouring footers, that you have to tie into, in a principal city, that you have to tie into utilities, and that can be very expensive. The water and sewer is the biggest issue. I don't know how you can get around those things except by finding a good site, being very careful about the site you choose.
Yeah, I think the same here in Cincinnati with the sewer and water fees. And I'm very interested in off-the-grid structures, and so how we might be able to have water or electricity off-site. And I think that's one of the things that is a benefit of the tiny homes on trailers. But when you talk about putting those in cities, I think Eve and I are both kind of in agreement on this, that it's not necessarily a good thing to just allow people to park a trailer anywhere in a city. But I wonder if a city could zone certain areas, perhaps, that where there might have been an old warehouse or industrial site that you're not allowed to dig in the ground because of the environmental concerns there, if that would be a good place to kind of have temporarily, trailers or the tiny homes on wheels, where you have specific sites that would be allowed, and you'd have water tanks and solar panels to live off the grid.
Yeah. So I think there's a really big difference between the tiny house movement on wheels and tiny houses in principal cities, where zoning codes and building codes really do need to be followed for good reason. I mean, you need to tie into the water and sewer system for health reasons, right? You need to have, you need to make sure that people are using means of heating that are not going to burn down the neighborhood. So there's good reason to have codes. It's a little different if you have a house on a trailer out in a field. And so if you separate those two things, you have very different issues.
But I think there are other examples around the country. You're starting to see buildings with certified Living Building Challenge, which kind of requires you to have all of your water and sewage taken care of on site. And I think we've come a long way with different technologies. They're very, very expensive and still not practical for the scale of a tiny home. But I would hope that in the next decade or so, cities start to take a look at those and allow, most likely through building code variances, for off-the-grid structures.
Brad, how did you pick the site for your houses?
I'm working with Over the Rhine Community Housing, who specializes kind of in affordable housing as their mission. And so I was working with them. They have the sites. They're going to be selling one of the sites to me, and the other one, we're kind of working out the real estate agreement on that one.
Did you have to do soil testing?
I will be, yes. Okay. I haven't done that yet.
Okay. And the houses are going to be built on concrete slabs, is that correct?
That's one of the pricing that we've been doing. We've looked at the concrete slab, we've looked at the piers and how that can be done. And it's going to be a back and forth between price and what the soil conditions are.
Brad Doug sent us an email. He wanted to know what's the benefit of this versus buying any of the homes that are for sale in, say, Madisonville, other areas for, around $40,000 or less sometimes.
I would expect most of those homes to need a little bit of work. These homes are going to be ready to live in. Additionally, I think there are huge benefits to living in Over the Rhine, especially at this location where you're about less than a 10-minute walk from Findlay Market. And a lot of other amenities within walking distance.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Mike in Clifton. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
A couple of points. I just bought a 30 by 60 lot on Ohio Avenue, literally a stone's throw from where Brad's place is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do know is that you have to tap into the sewer. You cannot get around tapping into the sewer. But the city, after $6,500, the city will pick up the rest of the cost of that. But I just had a question about, getting started, with the building permit process. If there was any kind of FHA-style loans you could get to develop, your property, that kind of thing, and finding an architect, to navigate the variances and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, for the architects, you can look to the American Institute of Architects and help. That would help you locate one to help you out. As far as what was your other question?
Loans.
Yes,
FHA loans.
That's a huge hurdle for something like a tiny home, because traditional financing doesn't really work for this model, especially in Cincinnati where there are no comps. And an appraiser cannot assign a value to this, what I've been told, and speaking with appraisers until it's built.
Well, Brad, I think there's a way to deal with that. I've dealt with this before. I mean, comparables are really a very big issue. But if you can show them that someone can live in a house like this for X dollars a month, mm-hmm. and that there are rentals nearby that, you know, probably are higher than that, I think that's one way to establish a market. And, you know, and the second important thing is this is really what Brad is doing by building two tiny houses. He's starting to establish a market that will make it much easier for other people and make it possible for them to go to a bank and get a loan, because you need his buildings to go up to have those comps.
Yeah, and then also there is some down payment assistance through the Ohio Housing Finance Authority. If you go to their website, you should be able to find that under the first-time homebuyer. And I believe there are some other loans for non-first-time homebuyers as well.
And Eve, isn't we're talking about comparables. One of the other barriers to loans is banks often don't perceive the smaller houses as having much resale value, do they?
I don't know yet.
Yeah, you haven't found out.
I don't know the answer to that.
That would be my main worry, is they might look at it and go, of course, you're telling me the costs are pretty high, so maybe they will have higher resale values. Who knows?
Well, the market is the market. If someone's willing to pay X dollars for it one time, why wouldn't someone be willing to pay, you know, the same amount of dollars for it on a resale? I don't really understand that argument. But the sort of comps that I'm seeing is Garfield is this funny little neighborhood surrounded by very strong neighborhoods, and it's kind of the neighborhood that's been left out. So you can go a couple of blocks away and not be able to find a one-bedroom unit to rent for less than $1,200 a month. So when you start looking at this little house and being, you know, having a mortgage and insurance for maybe $500 a month, it becomes that is a very strong comparable. And we have someone who's at the moment donating an appraisal for our tiny house. This is Integra Realty Resources, the Pittsburgh office, and they very kindly agreed to do a post-construction appraisal for us. So pretty soon we'll see what they think the house is worth. And we're doing that so that if a buyer comes along, we can give them the appraisal and they can go to a bank with it.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important to have that. And as well, when you're looking at traditional financing, typically a bank is going to sell the loan on the secondary market. And that market typically is going to be gone through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, regulated by the government. And that regulation mandates that it has to be at least a one bedroom to start out with. Otherwise, there are even more hurdles to jump through.
Let's talk with Samantha in Finneytown. Good afternoon, Samantha.
Hi.
How are you today?
Pretty good.
Good. What's your question?
I live in a community in Finneytown, and there is a part of Finneytown that has tiny houses, not 300 or 400 square feet, but around 900 to 1,000 square feet. Many of them are going into foreclosure, and these houses were built in the early 1950s. Very high quality construction. I haven't seen that kind of quality construction. It seems like it keeps getting worse every 10 years. You know, every decade we get less and less quality construction. And I wondered, why couldn't we just purchase up the foreclosures and revitalize them and market them as environmentally sound homes?
I think you can. I think people are currently doing that. I think both Eve and I are looking at the vacant lots as an opportunity to rethink and provide different housing choices.
Eve, did you want to weigh in on what she was talking about?
I agree with Brad. I think that people have different choices they make for different reasons in their lives, and the tiny house for me is showing people how they might rethink this particular neighborhood.
Yeah, I definitely am not proposing that we blanket Cincinnati with tiny houses everywhere. It's not for everyone. It's definitely a choice that you have to make. And like I said, it's not for everyone.
Brad, you get a sense it's gaining some momentum, though.
I think so. People's Liberty and I, we visited a woman building her own tiny home on wheels. It's about 90 square feet down in Independence, Kentucky. I'm familiar with another gentleman who is also building a tiny home in Kentucky. So I think it's definitely gaining momentum.
And Eve, what about you? You think this is something that's picking up momentum?
Well, for us in Pittsburgh, this first house has been a really big exercise in figuring out how to do it. So I'm not stopping there. I have 15 more planned, and another developer I'm working with who has 20 planned. I have had calls from the mayor of Foxburg and the chancellor of the Penn State University campus in New Kensington, all wanting to know how they can build 20, 40 tiny houses. So all for different reasons, all with the purpose of creating a solution to a problem that they're having. So this is, again, it's a little bit different than the one house on a trailer, tiny house movement. These are people who are trying to find solutions for blighted areas in their city, and sort of thinking out of the box. So in my mind, I separate this tiny house movement into two different things. One is, the do-it-yourselfers who put together a tiny house where they can live, free of the rest of the world on a trailer very inexpensively. And then cities that are looking for solutions, affordable solutions for vacancy and blighted areas and affordable living.
Brad, what's the projected completion date for your houses?
It has to be done by the end of the year. There's no give on that. So hopefully I will follow through on that. I'm looking to break ground most likely early fall, August or September.
Okay. Well, good luck to both of you, Eve and Brad, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
2015 Hail Fellow Brad Cooper and architect, city planner, and urban designer Eve Picker with CityLab. Coming up, another step forward in plans for a co-op grocery store in Clifton. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.